through. Speaking of all-time greats, what a goal. How good is he?
If you're David Mundy, you can do anything.
Brayshaw. Oh, he goose-stepped beautifully. And a couple. Herky-jerky.
Welcome back to the Flag Mantle podcast. My name is Stuart Sterling and I'm going to be your host once again. We are back to the weeklies. And it's a good time to be back because the Fremantle Dockers are coming off a 17-point win over the St. Kilda Saints over at Marvel Stadium, primetime Saturday night. I enjoyed the Saturday night at home. I actually really did. I actually really, really liked that slot as an away game. You know, it was just perfect having dinner on the couch with Dad and just watching the game at that time I thought was really, really cool. So, you know, I'm glad we got the chocolates because it was a bit of a strange game. 8 goals, 7:55 was St Kilda's score. Fremantle, 9 goals, 18 behinds, 72. Now, this is becoming a bit of a trend over the last few weeks. Our goal kicking has been less than preferable. And, you know, there's many different reasons that this could be. I'm hoping it's just a form slump. I'm hoping it's just a form slump for now because 9 goals, 18 is a little bit ridiculous. That's 33% shot on goal. If you shot 33% doing pretty much anything else, you're below average. Even in the NBA, shooting a three-pointer, if you're shooting 33%, that's below league average. So, yeah, I'm not too thrilled with 9 goals, 18. I don't think anyone can be, but it doesn't seem to be something that Justin Lohmuir and the coaching staff are too worried about or concerned about. I've listened to a lot of rhetoric over the past few days regarding the team, and yeah, no one really seems to be too bothered by it. It seems like it's a media-driven narrative, which, I mean, of course, 9 goals, 18, and then what do we kick against Sydney? 4 goals, 15, couple out in the fools? Like, yes, we haven't been kicking goals when we should have been kicking goals. Ah, yes, 4 goals, 15 for 39 points versus 13-9, 87. We have no problem getting shots on goal, and I think that's the frustrating thing. I think we are a lot better than the scoreboard has reflected in the last few weeks, and it's literally just down to finishing. Even back in the Richmond game, we scored 15 goals, 13. Like, I mean, 15 goals, 13 is a bit better, but you'd be hoping for a higher percentage in goals kicked than that, especially if we're taking all these marks inside 50. We are one of the better teams at marks inside 50 over the last few weeks. We average 11.9 per game, which has us in the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We are 8th in the competition for marks inside 50. So, yeah, it's, you know, and over the last 4 weeks, you'll hear it later, but we actually, Fremantle have been the number one team for shots at goal. Over the last month of football, where we have won, how many games have we won in the last month? Well, we lost to Sydney. We beat Richmond. And then, yeah, we beat the Dogs. So we're 3-1 in the last month of football, and we are number one for shots at goal. So I don't think we're in a bad spot. I think ninth on the ladder probably doesn't really reflect where we're at as a football club and as a team and where I think we're going. I think, you know, you look at the odds for a game against Collingwood, we're actually favourites, and I think that makes a whole lot of sense. The weather isn't going to be great on Friday. We'll get into Friday a little bit later, but let's recap some of the Saints game first, shall we? Yeah, so I wasn't a huge fan of watching this game. This was one of the more frustrating ones that I have watched. Let's start with the bad before we get to the good. Jai Amos, 2 goals, 5. Oh, what has happened? What has happened? Can we call him Nev? Can we still call this guy Nev? It should be always a miss. There seems to be something a little bit wrong. I'm not sure, because last year his routine was applauded for being so simple yet so accurate. And now we're here. It's so simple and so inaccurate. And now he gets all this heat. So, yeah, I'm really keen to see how he performs in the week coming up, especially going for goal, because it's not like he doesn't get shots. He got 7 shots on goal. Can you imagine if he kicked 5 goals, 2, 6 goals, 1? My God, we'd be raving about him. Like, he would be one of the best and brightest young stars in the competition, but he's just missing some sitters. So I'm really hopeful about Jai Amos. I really think he can be the next best thing in Perth. Hayden Young, 0 goals, 3. Yeah, not really his goal kicking. He is supposed to be one of the best kicks in the competition, let alone one of the best kicks in our team. So, yeah, 0 goals, 3 is probably not what you want from him. But a lot of these shots were a bit rushed. They were contested footy. So, you know, a bit of a pass, not really forward. He has been playing a little bit more forward when Matthew Johnson and Nat Pfeiffer were running through the midfield a bit more, which I actually really, really like. I think the ability to become a goal-kicking, damaging midfielder whilst also being able to tag a little bit whilst he's in there will make him one of the more dangerous players in the competition for years to come. So really excited to see Hayden Young finally put some goals on the scoreboard. 0 goals, 3. Yikes. Patrick Voss played a good game, had 4 shots on goal, but kicked just 1 of them. Yeah, probably getting dropped for Darcy this afternoon. So stay tuned for the teams coming out. I think he's going to be a fantastic player for a while now. And I think our key forwards are set. I think these are the 4 guys we can take in for the next 10 years and go, this is our forward brigade. These are the guys that we are going to pump games into. These guys are going to take us to a flag. Amos, Tracy, Jackson with Voss backing them up. I just, it just makes me excited to be a Freo fan, which is, I don't know, it's not something I was saying, 4 or 5 weeks ago when we lost 3 in a row, but that's the nature of footy, isn't it? The next one here is Michael Walter. 0 goals, 2, 7 disposals, 2 tackles, 34 fantasy points. Yeah, Sonny doesn't look like he's got a whole lot of football in front of him. I wouldn't be surprised if later in the year when everyone is fit and healthy, he's no longer a best 22 player. I just don't see the value he brings to our forward line anymore. And I understand that you can be the best guy around the club and a leader at training, but that doesn't mean you have to be in the team every week. And maybe he's more suited to a substitute role or something of that nature where, you know, he can really go, okay, I've got 20, 30 minutes to make an impact. I don't need to worry about, you know, my legs giving out or my body or anything like that. I can just go out there and play footy for half an hour and be done with it. And I just, he's ducking for every free kick and he's not getting anything and he doesn't try and keep the play moving and he jumps too early for speckies and he's given away free kicks and he's taken himself out of plays. And I just think football is so different now than when Michael Walters was at his peak, and it's like he's trying to play a different sport in a sense, and it's just not working for him at the moment. So hopefully he can recapture some form in the next couple of weeks, or else he might be looking at playing for Peel. Jeremy Sharp, though, he had a few opportunities from outside 50, and one of them got touched, one of them got marked on the line. That was really frustrating because he could have ended up with 2 or 3 goals by the end of the game and looked really good in the stat sheet afterwards. He's looking fantastic, Jeremy Sharp. But let's get into the midfield mix, shall we? Rowan Marshall, 171 fantasy points. He went crazy. 31 disposals, 7 marks, 9 tackles, 39 hitouts, and 8 clearances. Massive game from Rowan Marshall. You've got to say he's probably neck and neck with Max Gawn for the All-Australian position this year. But a guy that got more coaches' votes than him in the same game, Luke Jackson, 116 fantasy points, 25 touches, 3 marks, 6 tackles, 10 clearances, 39 hitouts. Now, 25 disposals sounds like a lot. He had 3 kicks. Luke Jackson kicked the ball 3 times. That is a ruckman game to a T. 3 kicks in a game of football. What is a little bit worrying is his mark numbers. Now, he's a double toucher. So whenever he goes up for a mark, it's always two or three touches before he comes down with it. And that scares me just a little bit about his future development. But, oh boy, he's so good in the midfield. He acts as an extra midfielder in there. And that's why he got 10 clearances. I think 6 or 7 in the first half. It was absolutely bonkers. So, I thought whilst Marshall had the better game statistically, numerically, I thought Luke Jackson was probably more impactful when the game was there to be won. He was, the amount of ground this guy covers is insane. He's quickly becoming one of my favorite players to watch, because every time I watch him in the ruck, I just go, I cannot believe he's just done that. I cannot believe he is just absolute, like, he's just a 2 meter midfielder. And not like a slow, big midfielder, Connor Nash midfielder, like genuine pace midfielder. He's got the ability to move off his line really quickly. He's smooth, he's silky, he makes the right decisions. Like, oh, I could just glaze and glaze and glaze Luke Jackson forever and ever and ever.
That's what I'm talking about! That's why he's the MVP! That's why he's the GOAT!
The GOAT! Yeah, Luke Jackson was fantastic on the weekend. Someone else that was really, really good was Luke Ryan. Luke Ryan, 13 marks, a lot of them intercept marks, 27 disposals. He is the number one ranked player in the AFL for marks this year. So probably All-Australian jacket is waiting for him at the end of the year. Another defender that I thought played a fantastic game and is putting together a really, really nice season, slowly becoming one of our best players. Jordan Clark, 29 disposals, 24 of them kicks, 8 marks, 8 tackles, just 723 meters gained, led the game for that statistic. You can see why teams are tagging him. And something I'm just slowly noticing now is our defenders, they are heavily encouraged to kick the footy, whereas our midfielders and forwards are handball happy. Speaking of Nat 5, 23 disposals, 19 of them handballs. We are the number one handball team in the competition. No one seems to talk about it because, I don't know, everyone seems to be really bored by the way Fremantle plays. But speaking of outside perceptions on how Fremantle plays, this was Ross Lyon's perception on Fremantle last round.
I thought they dominated midfield. Clearances outside of centre bounce, probably, but you know, they're more from anywhere in the midfield. They just dominated clearance, and we're just frustrated. We're trying to do lots of things or enough to stem the bleeding. We got a little bit of some entry later in the fourth, but you know, it was only their inaccuracy that kept us anywhere near it, to be honest. So we're really disappointed. The game swung on midfield dominance. Our ball winners in there just dried up. We threw a few there, moved a few, but it didn't change.
Yeah, it didn't change at all. The story of the game was the clearances, 33-50 in Fremantle's favour. That's a smashing. That is an absolute walloping. We're not a great centre clearance team, so we don't win it out the middle as much as you'd probably like from a team that prides themselves on their clearances. St Kilda actually had more. 9 centre clearances, 2-8 in the Saints' favour. However, stoppage clearances, 24 for the Saints, 42 for the Dockers. And post-clearance, well, we like to control the ball. 207 uncontested possessions to St Kilda, 248 to Fremantle. Once again, that is a walloping. 41 extra uncontested possessions. St Kilda could not get their hands on it. And what did we do with that ball when we had it? Well, we went inside 50 a lot. 53 inside 50s. Our average for the year is 46. So that's huge. And then once we got it inside 50, 58% efficiency. So St Kilda were at 33. That tells you pretty much all you need to know about the game. The only factor that led to this not being a 50-60 point win was the fact that we kicked 18 behinds from 27 scoring shots. And that's not including out on the fools. But here's one of our best forwards this season. 20 goals to his name across 10 games. Josh Tracy given an interview post-game.
Do you want to get that out the way with what will it be like matching up against Lockie and seeing him again?
It'd be good to see him again. Obviously, a lot of boys still very close with him, yeah, me included. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to be treated any differently to any other game. Yeah, I think it'll be what it'll be. And, yeah, we'll be going out there to try and get 4 points.
Is there one of the guys that kind of puts their hand up going like they'd like to actually have the role unlocking, knowing what he can do?
I think one of the backs, obviously. Yeah, I'm not in those sort of conversations down that end of the ground, but yeah, I feel like there certainly could be.
Collingwood, you're kind of facing them when they've sort of hit their straps now. What have you watched of Collingwood and what have you made of them?
Yeah, I think that's good. You want to be playing the teams when they're up and about like they are at the moment. To be honest, we haven't watched anything. Obviously, just finished our review from the game on the weekend, so that'll be a tomorrow morning job.
What did the review tell you about, particularly about goal kicking? Because obviously, I think it's 33 behinds in two games. Is it something you need to work on, or where are you at with that?
I don't think so. I think we're creating a lot of opportunities. It's just, yeah, that little thing that we can just tinker away at in the background, and a couple off weeks, and everyone was pretty quick to jump on it. But I think, yeah, over the next few weeks will certainly be a big bounce back for us.
But even Jai missing as well, five behinds, like that, he prides himself, doesn't he? Well, how's he feeling?
Yeah, I think we all pride ourselves, and a bit like anything, he's only human. He's going to have a hiccup every now and again, and we'll certainly wrap our arms around everyone who's missed a couple along the way. And I think that's part of the game we play. But yeah, we'll get back to work again tomorrow and really hone in on that.
You've barely missed all year personally. What's your technique allowing you to do what others are struggling with at the moment?
It's just a routine that I've figured out that works nicely for me, and fortunately enough has paid off for me this year when I've needed it. I suppose that's something we can look into as well, as helping each other, sharing tips and things like that. But everyone has their own different setup and routine, so it's about figuring what's best for you and what works for you.
Yeah, 13 goals and 33 behinds over the last 2 weeks. Thanks to Adrian Barrich for making me a little bit sad there. But Josh Tracy bats them back as well as they get bowled at him. Barra, I feel like it's time for a new job. Those questions were pretty poor, to be honest. Obviously, everyone prides themselves on their goal kicking. It is their job. Quite literally their job. The same way you should be priding yourself on your questions. Sorry, not sorry. So stay with me until the next segment, where we get a little bit more in depth about our goal kicking. Shout out Tim Minchin for the music once again. I wanted to explore a little bit of a different route when it came to concentration and preparation. So I found a little quote from the GOAT, Michael Jordan.
My mental preparation for the game is very different than most. I try to relax myself. I'm a jokester, a prankster, if you want to say it that way. I listen to music, I joke around with the guys, I take my whole mind away from the game itself. And then when the time comes to focus on the game, I focus on my athletic skills and putting it together with the team and somehow collectively going out and doing our jobs each and every day. I challenge myself to be the best basketball player every moment that I'm playing the game of basketball. And sometimes that means tricking yourself in your mind to say that you can't do this or your weaknesses are here, but yet you still try to work on improving those weaknesses. A lot of people may say, well, Michael Jordan never had weaknesses. Michael Jordan had weaknesses. He just had to dig deep inside himself to figure out what they were and challenge himself to improve those weaknesses. So mentally, I like to challenge myself to go out and play a perfect basketball game, although I know you can't do that. It's practically impossible to play a perfect game, but that doesn't mean you can't challenge yourself to do that.
Now, Michael Jordan was a little bit crazy, so I wouldn't be expecting many of our guys to think or act the same way as Michael Jordan, but I think it acts as a pretty good case study as what preparation means to different people. Michael Jordan, one of the greatest of all time, admitted to not taking himself too serious in the lead up to the game, but once it was game time, he's absolutely on. And that quote sort of made me think about, are we too sanitized as a club? Because I, from an outsider's perspective, looking into the club, it looks like everyone has a really, there's a collective buy-in to become as good a team as possible. And I know that sounds great and fantastic, but it's almost everyone is so selfless. There's a huge gym culture, which is great, but it's almost like, I don't know how to explain it. It's really high performance is what I see. And from an outsider's perspective, it does seem like it takes away a little bit of the personality of some of the players. Like, a lot of guys, when we're 60 to 50 out, instead of just having a ping when you should probably be having a ping, they look to be too cute and try and size someone up inside 50 when they weren't so free, or it was just a better option to go to goal. And it makes you think, are we too bought into the team? Are we selfish enough? And I think a player that is selfish enough is Jeremy Sharp, and we saw evidence of that on the weekend when he had a couple of shots from about 50 meters out when, in my opinion, he absolutely should have taken those shots. He has every right to. He can make them. We've seen them before, and in the context of the game, it was probably the right choice to have them. Unlucky with getting touched or marked on the line, but regardless, I think Fremantle need to be a bit more ballsy. I think once we start becoming too cute and too tactical and too, okay, this is our method and we're sticking to our method 100%, and you know, obviously, this is great for team buy-in, this is great for playing a certain way, but I just want to see a little bit of fight, a little bit of dog, you know, a little bit of a woof. And I'm not seeing it. It seems really sanitized. You look at Collingwood last year when they won the flag, it was boys yelling at each other, having a good time together, just enjoying footy. It doesn't really look like they're enjoying footy when they play, and it looks more like, hey, I'm enjoying being really good at my job rather than I'm enjoying the art and the sport of football. And, you know, I think that's a really fantastic approach to go for as a football club, as a direction, but I'd just like to see maybe 5-10% more of, you know, a flair of go, of I'm just going to take the game on and rip it apart. I would just love to see a little bit more on that. But JL was interviewed by Ryan Daniels on Channel 7. If you're listening to this podcast through some headphones, just be wary, your left ear is going to like this a lot more than your right ear. So, sorry about that.
Any danger that dodgy goal-kicking radar can get fixed?
G'day, Ryan. Yeah, it was pretty disappointing. Obviously, the last couple of weeks we've been inaccurate, but I feel like we can get on top of it just as quickly as it came. 3 weeks ago, we weren't talking about our goal-kicking, so, you know, we're not crossing our fingers either. We worked hard on it today at training. We've done a fair bit of work on our goal-kicking the last week and a half, so hoping it turns. But, yeah, like you said, we're doing a lot right.
Yeah, averaged 25 scoring shots in the last 4 games. So you are getting shots on goal, and the method seems right. There is a lot going well.
Yeah, there is, and you're right. I think we've had the most scoring shots in the comp last 4 weeks, and we've conceded the least amount of shots. So that shows that our game's in pretty good order. Yeah, clearly we need to make sure we finish a bit better and get a bit more bang for buck on those set shots in particular. So, yeah, hopefully it turns for us on Friday.
He's been close. He's been really close. Is it finally time for Sean Darcy to be back?
Yeah, we're getting closer. He ticked a big box in main training today, got through, performed really well. So, yeah, if he pulls up well tomorrow, all systems go for Friday.
That's good news. Now, Nick Dacos, the Collingwood star, he's very hard to stop. Will you be putting a tag on him on Friday night?
Still working our way through that. We can't let him run around and get 40 possessions and dominate the game. So we need to make sure we quell his influence. Still working through how to do that, and really mindful that there are other mids in Jack Crisp and Scott Pendlebury also really damaging as well. So we need to find the balance with our method there.
I read your comments in the Herald Sun this morning. I tend to agree with most of what you said. What can be done to equalise the travel a little bit better in the AFL, do you think?
Yeah, well, a lot. Like I said in the article, we accept that living in the West, we have to travel a lot. But, yeah, the northern states get access to the NGAs. SA get access to an extra home game through a gather-round. So all I'm asking for, and you know, all Simo's asking for, is fairness. So I think the weekend is a great example. Six-day break, and we play a Saturday night game away, which forces us to stay an extra day and a half and get back Sunday. I think West Coast had a six-day break off Gold Coast a couple of weeks ago. So just little things like that can aid the travel burden.
Well said. It needs to be better. Collingwood, Friday night. Can't wait for that one. Optus Stadium. Justin, good luck.
Thanks, Ron.
Yes, can't wait for that one on Friday. Tomorrow night, actually. But I just wanted to chime in and say a little something about the flight. Whichever dummy journo said that, oh, we shouldn't be complaining about travel because they get 11 business class flights return. Excuse me. We're playing Collingwood at Optus Stadium for one of, I think they travel 5 or 6 times in a year, and this is one of them. And they get it on a Friday night, and then their next week game is not on a Friday night, so they get heaps of rest in between their travel. Yeah, I wish we got that. Oh, no, it is Friday night. But that's what, a 7-day turnaround? That's better than we got. We played Saturday night. We're coming home. We're playing on Friday night. Bruh. Bruh, they don't understand. That's the thing. These Victorians will never understand the inconvenience of travel and how much harder it makes it for your football club, which is really why we've only got 4 premierships in WA since, what, like the 80s? It's just preposterous. So, yeah, let's just calm down and get into the game against Collingwood. Yes, so the last 3 times we have played Collingwood, we've lost them all. Last year, we lost them by 46 points, round 18. The year before that was obviously our semi-finals, 20-point loss to them. And yeah, earlier in that year, we lost them by 6 goals. So we haven't got a great record against the Pies, but we are favourites in this game. And there's one guy I think that we should probably, I don't think we should be targeting, but I think, you know, whenever he gets the ball, just make sure you tackle him a little bit harder. Here is Lockie Schultz talking about his contract status when he was a Docker on Backchat with Will Schofield.
The last one I want to speak about, which I think is really unique to your footy career and to the AFL, is your contracts. And it's a bit on the back of coming into the AFL as a mature age draft pick. There's not many people that do that, especially over the past 10 years. It's getting a little bit more, but you don't see many guys do it. And then kind of just researching for this podcast, like the way your contract's gone, you got delisted at the end of 2020. Is that right?
Yep.
And then re-rookied.
Yep.
So like pre-listed by the footy club with Buells.
Yep.
And rookied. And then I don't know if you're still on the rookie list, or you certainly spent a bit more time on the rookie list under contract. It's just been a really unique contracted footy career so far.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it's been crazy. I remember speaking to Blake Akers last year, and he was saying he's never played. Last year was the first year he'd played in his final year of a contract. And I said, I haven't played in not a final year of my contract.
Really?
So, yeah, after. So draft, 2019, I got a 2-year deal to start. So 2020, but it's a locked in contract. 2020, COVID year, COVID hit.
Yeah.
List sizes were getting cut. So all year, I played every game that year. So I was like, oh, surely I'll get a year, get a contract. All year, Woolsey was like in close contact with me and my manager and was like, look, mate, we want to give you a contract. But we just don't know what list size is going to be yet.
Right.
And we've already, because they had already signed a lot of guys the year before for the following year. I was like one of maybe 6 blokes fighting for 3 spots or whatever it was. purely because we were the only ones out of contract, so we were the only ones that they could then delist.
It's just bad timing.
It was just horrible timing. And then got to the end of the year, still hadn't heard anything, still waiting on these sizes to be announced, and it was just like, this is horrible. It's not going to happen. This can't happen. And then they announced list sizes, and then they announced that rookie list sizes were going to be a bit bigger. So primary list was going to shrink, but the rookie list was going to grow or something like that.
And you could pre-list ahead of the rookie draft.
Yeah, so you could delist and relist without actually having to put someone through the rookie draft case, I know, another team poaches them or whatever. I don't know what it's for. But so they've done that with me, and they actually said – they actually gave me the option of – oh, I won't go down that path, but from becoming – so obviously when you get delisted, you become an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, so that's the other unique thing. You're an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, now. So instead of playing 7 years, I've had to play two and I've become an unrestricted free agent.
When he said I won't go down that path, when he was talking about another option that Fremantle had offered to him, I really, really wonder what that is. That interests me a lot. And I hope one day we hear about it, because I'd really like to know what we offered Lockie Schultz, whether it was, you know, a longer-term deal on less money, whether it was a trade, whether it was something like that. I have no idea, but I would love to know. But here's Lockie Schultz as a Pie.
Yeah, it feels very cool, actually. It's a little bit surreal, but yeah, it's a privilege, so very, very happy to be here. Obviously, it's just a great club with great history, and it's just a special place and a special time to be involved in the club. And obviously, the supporter base is the best in the AFL, and the most passionate fans in the AFL, so that was a massive incentive to come across, and obviously the opportunity to come home as well. This is home for me, so to be able to get home to friends and family, and my partner Maddie is also from here, so for us both to be able to come home, yeah, it's a great opportunity, and just honoured to be here and very happy.
Most passionate fans in the league, my backside. When's the last time you saw a Collingwood fan travel to Marvel Stadium? It's a different suburb in the city you're from. Are you kidding me? When Collingwood were going terribly, who was there? Who is realistically there outside of their marquee games that they're handed on a silver platter for being around since the 1800s? Like, oh, I'm just lucky you're going to get your head taken off on the weekend in a fair way, in a fair bump. In fact, you might run into someone's arms or fists. I don't know. You punch Blake Akers in the back of the head, try to king hit him. That's a lot of our mates, you know, a lot of our teammates' best friend. So yeah, we'll see what they think about you leaving our club and trying to hit friends of the players and now playing against them, hopping straight to the premiership favorites. Thanks Lockie Schultz. But more about the Pies have gone on a bit of a streak recently. They just snuck over the line against the Crows at the MCG. Jordan Dugowie kicking the last goal, which was spurred on by Isaac Quainer's smother. Subsequently, Nick Dacos' run through the middle of the ground, spotting up Dugowie. So they managed to do that once again. So shout out the Pies for finding themselves in close games every bloody week, because they cannot seem to close teams out until the last few minutes. Nick Dacos, obviously, will he need a tag? I'm not sure. My head would go to no, just go midfield for midfield. Dugowie is out this week, so that's a huge advantage that we are going to be having for this game. They don't have a huge forward line, so if we can put a lot of pressure on the kicker, I don't think there's anything that they're going to be able to do back there if their entry's not clean as a whistle, because our back line has been standing up all year. Luke Ryan, James Ace, Jordan Clark, Heath Chapman, and Alex Pierce are some of the guys that I just think is going to rip them to shreds. Obviously, they've got a Brownlow medalist in there as well, Tom Mitchell. Not sure if he'll be playing. Teams will be out later this week. But we're going to be getting back a ruckman of our own, Sean Darcy. And what a week to do it. Darcy Cameron versus Sean Darcy. Mason Cox in there maybe a little bit, but that's not going to be a problem for the big fella. I just think we get this job done. I think this is just another job that we get done. They're missing, I think, their most damaging midfielder. I don't think Dacos is as damaging as Degoe. Not to say he's a bad player at all. I just think when Degoe takes, you know, grip of a game, it's probably a little bit more impactful than what Dacos can do. Yeah, and then, of course, they don't really have much of a forward line either, and we've probably got the best defence in the competition. You add that into having the most scoring shots over the past month against top eight teams like Sydney and the Western Bulldogs and, well, not a top eight team. Well, they were a top eight team last year in St Kilda. So, yeah, I think we're a good chance here. I think we're a fantastic chance. They're a much more contested team than we are, so they're probably going to want to keep the ball in stoppage as much as possible, and they're going to want to flood stoppage. They're not going to want us to flick the ball around with our hands whenever we win a clearance, because that's just death for other teams against Fremantle. So they're going to bring the pressure around stoppage. Our job is going to be clearing the stoppage as quickly as possible, getting it onto the outside and getting the runners out, because they're going to congest the ball as much as possible. They're also going to want to go fast when they have the ball, so to not allow this overlap or not allow this fold back defense that we've got, get everyone back, zone up and then push forward, they're not going to want to buy into that. So they're going to flood stoppages, play fast. We've got to clear the stoppage as quickly as possible, get the ball on the outside, and get some clean entries. And I think that's how the game's going to be played out. As for predictions, this is going to be a very, very good game. If we turn up, if we, you know, are Fremantle of... If we're just Fremantle, if we are the Fremantle of the past month, I think we get the job done. I know Collingwood have been on a roll, but I think this is going to be a close game. I think we're going to get done by 8 points. You know, obviously, you'd like it to be more than that, because Collingwood in the clutch have shown that, well, that's their wheelhouse, really. So if we can avoid the clutch as much as possible, if we don't have to play from behind, if we can, you know, have a good first quarter, and, you know, we don't have to win the first quarter, we just don't have to get smashed in the first quarter, that would be nice. I think we've got a good chance in this game. I think this is where Jai Amos can get off the leash a little bit. Maybe he kicks 3 or 4, because I'm not sure if Darcy Moore is going to be on Josh Tracy or Jai Amos or even Luke Jackson. I think one of them gets off the chain here. I think it's going to be very hard to stop Caleb Sarong. I don't think they've got a guy that can run with Caleb Sarong. I think he's going to be too good. And in the back line, I think Jordan Clark is going to be our go-to guy this game. So, yeah, look out for that. Maybe a big call for this game. Big call. Hayden Young seals the game with a miraculous clearance goal in the last quarter. I think that would be real nice. I think we're going to win by 8 points. Amos is going to kick 3 or 4. And from Collingwood, who to watch? Well, obviously, Nick Dacos is the guy. Josh Dacos as well. No Degoe. Tom Mitchell's a Brownlow medalist. Outside of all that, I think Jamie Elliott is probably going to give us a few headaches. And Will Hoskin Elliott as well. The Elliott twins, Jamie and Will. I think they're going to probably pop up and cause us some havoc back there. But that is going to do it for this episode of the Flag Mantle podcast. So very happy to be back doing weeklies. It's just good to be back in the studio. So thank you for listening. Follow us on socials. Give us a rate. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Flag Mantle podcast. If you have made it this far, please leave us a review on whatever streaming site you use to access the Flag Mantle podcast. And don't forget, we've got social media too, over at the Flag Mantle podcast on Instagram and X. So go follow us there, send us a cheeky DM, and you might get a response. We'll see. Thank you for listening once again, and I'll see you all next time.